The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a story about one man's journey from death row executioner to Lutheran pastor. It's titled The Executioner's Redemption, My Story of Violence, Death, and Saving Grace. You can check it out at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Executioner's Redemption is on sale for $12.99. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, The Executioner's Redemption.
Everyone understands that the values in New York City are socially liberal or pro-abortion or pro-gay marriage.
Contrary to Senator Cruz, I think New York values are America's values. Yes. And we want to stand up for those here in New York and across the country.
He does not like New York, and he doesn't like New Yorkers. That's when he brought up New York values, like in disgust.
It's up to you, New York.
Really concerned that what you're suggesting is that we should give our own words and our own paraphrase to people when they're suffering in place of Jesus' word.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We had a conversation some weeks back with Pastor Jonathan Fisk of Worldview Everlasting TV talking about pop culture. It's a regular series we do with him, but In this discussion of Christianity and pop culture, we're talking about our sports-centered culture, and it certainly is a priority. I think the takeaway from that conversation was a warning against our sports-centered culture, sports as idolatry, but there's even more to its place in our society and our culture than that serious subject. We're going to be talking about our sports-centered culture, continuing our conversation with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. There's a lot we can learn about ritual, about the feminization of our culture and of our church. And in the world of sports, where things are still black and white, where there's still truth and falsehood, where they actually go to the tape. I watched them do this last night on a close call at first base at the Cubs-Cardinals game. Was he out? Was he not out? He was called out. They went to the tape. They looked at it. They actually went to the record and said, you know, he's either out or he isn't, and we're going to have to say which it really was. There's objective truth in sports. It's one of the only places you'll find objective truth in our culture anymore. We're going to talk about all of that with Pastor Jonathan Fisk here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Live this Tuesday afternoon, April the 19th. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will join us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the Good Shepherd in John chapter 10. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, and our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us to talk about Christianity and pop culture and our sports-centered culture. He's pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Now, the last time we talked about this, it got you thinking along a number of lines, but one of them had to do with ritual in sports and in our sports-centered culture. What were you thinking?
Well, ritual, and specifically ritual and the masculine, and the question in my mind, why is it that sports are so capable, by their ritual, of enticing the American male, that he will devote vast amounts of time and energy to observing, keeping up with, memorizing, giving almost an entire realm of his life and heart to this, and yet then the ritual of the church, which in theory, right, is eternal, real, actually meaningful, not going to change next year the way, say, a championship team will be different every year, that, for some reason, the average American male finds pretty dull and boring and unappealing to him, and trying to ask, well, why is this? What is the difference here? And so everything else you were saying there a few moments ago is not disconnected from that, because I do think it may have something to do with this black and white truth reality, And I do think that that black and white truth reality has something to do with the spirit of competition as well, that there is a right and a wrong, a winner and a loser, a good and an evil. And those aren't always exactly the same thing, but they do kind of dwell in the same world. And that it's as if because man in American culture as male has been really ostracized, really pushed to a corner and not allowed to be male anywhere where he doesn't have to share it with the feminine and with the female, it's almost as if sports has become his retreat. And so in that, the rituals of sport, that whichever one he happens to follow or be a part of, become a sign for him of his masculinity. And you see this even in an elevation to some extent of various male sports over the female sports. You know, it's not like a vast swath of American males are devoting themselves to ice skating and following professional ice skating. It's football. It's baseball, two sports which still don't have professional women alternatives. And then you can throw basketball in there, although there's been a lot of moves to try to blur the lines there a little bit. The danger in this kind of a conversation always, of course, is that the feminist straw man will be thrown at us, which that we're somehow trying to keep women in their place or say women are less than men or anything or things like that. It really isn't what I'm getting at here. What I'm getting at is that there is a diversity in the human species, that man and woman are different, and these are both glorious realities, and yet we're in rebellion against that to the level that in order for woman to become man, which seems to be not only part of the curse, but really the press of feminism, is that a woman is only as good as her being able to do what a man can do. In order to make that a reality, we've had to diminish men's ability to do that and push them to the side. And sports has become for many men then, both in society and in their homes, a retreat, kind of the last stand of their masculinity. And it's not that women can't like sports or anything like that, but that I think that the reason men have devoted themselves ritually and to the ritual of sports is largely having to do with this need for a place where they can be men. And it's kind of one of the last ones we got.
Okay, so are you saying, would you go so far as to say, Jonathan, that contrary to popular belief, men are wired for ritual? I think about the traditionally masculine pursuits, and I can't think of one that doesn't have some kind of deeply embedded ritual or rituals associated with it. Are you saying that to begin with?
Oh, absolutely. If not, I don't know if I should say, you know, more than woman, but at least to the equivalent, you know. They aren't always the same ritual, but men are tremendously habitual creatures as a whole. They thrive on repetition and kind of following a pattern. It doesn't have to be, you know, religious ritual, but even the way in which I remember my one of my neighbors growing up, he loved his lawn, and he'd be out there with his push mower in the summer, literally every day at the same time, clipping off 2 millimeters of grass to keep that thing putting green quality lawn exactly where it needed to be. It was his ritual, you know, it was his religion in one way, and I don't mean that in a spiritual sense, but in his repetitious sense, the place where he went for stability and to have his own kind of stamp on the world. Men are very much a part of that. And in this then, even the liturgical rituals of the church, at least historically speaking, I mean, these were developed by men, by very strong and masculine men who believed in the diversity of man and woman, men who were willing to die for what they were convicted of and devoted themselves to the realities of truth and the heroism of a religion set apart. Now, a lot of that is kind of been eked away, and there's various studies or people who will talk about that going all the way back several hundred years of a slow bleed of the masculinity out of the Western Church. But I don't think there's anything that I don't think you can question that fact now, that the ritual of the church today doesn't strike the American man as masculine. Now, why that is, I don't know, but it's not that he's opposed to ritual itself. What he is opposed to is things which would demean him and steal from him his place in the created order, his existence in the created order. And so again, with sport, you know, it's a world where you can't fake it. You can't identify yourself as something that you're not. And so if you're a woman who wants to play football in the NFL, it's not that you can't just because we say so. You're going to walk out there, and the distinction between a man's body and a woman's body will be unavoidable. It's just going to happen, right? And are there a few women out there that might be bigger than some men? Yes. But in sports, you see the top of abilities rising, and once you get to that certain level, there really isn't a place for competition in that sense. It distinguishes us. And then that goes between men and men as well. It's a wonderful truth of the game that there is a winner and a loser. And yet we see this being attacked at the lower levels where everyone is given a trophy. And you can go the other way and go extremely wrong, where you have kids in fourth grade, you know, being coached and cheered on to demolish their opponent and, you know, to be vicious about it too. So, you know, there's two different edges down there. But at its peak, and I think this is why the men of America as a whole kind of pursue this ritual, it's a place of truth. And no matter what we say, no matter how much we'll give, you know, voice to this, oh, I don't really believe there's a truth for everyone thing. No, we thrive on reality. We don't thrive on ideology that doesn't actually exist, on dreams that don't really impact us. We thrive on truth, which is why the whole country can get into March Madness and love watching the underdog, you know, the David beat the Goliath on the last second three-point shot that nobody can deny happens, and the crowd goes wild and they'll play it over and over and over again. Why? Because it's a moment of truth. It's a moment of real existence. And there's something incredible about that, right? I mean, I don't want to just last time we talked about the negative of this. There's something really good about that in sport. And for that reason, I would even say, I hope we have sport in heaven. You know, I don't know how it's going to work in a perfect world where you have winner and loser, but it's a moment of clearly enjoying the gifts of the created order in a competition, in a feat, in a match. What is it about the church then now in 21st century America and its liturgy that has, what's been lost in that? How can the place of truth, the buttress of truth, be losing the war of truth to something as trivial as a sport? And that's, I think, a very important question.
Well, I wonder about, and we'll get to this on the other side of the break, what I wonder about is the irony of a church that has very decisively abandoned all historic ritual, Christian ritual, handed down from the scriptures through the church and the church's tradition. But they're more than willing to try and get the men back in church on Super Bowl Sunday by bringing in the ritual of sports. We'll talk about that with Pastor Jonathan Fisk of Worldview Everlasting TV right after this.
We don't look to the Anne Voss camps and the Beth Moores of the world for what it means to be a Christian woman.
Adrienne Dorheinz talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We look first to Jesus, and his word tells us that a godly woman is marked by things like repentance and piety, humility and grace. And ultimately, this kind of woman lives a really full life in faith. She has Christ's name on her, she receives all the blessings he has to give, and she rejoices in those. That's what the life of a baptized woman looks like, and that's who the Lord has created us as his daughters to be.
You can meet and hear Adrienne Dorheinz, Making the Case for Biblical Womanhood, Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
The Divine Service is where Christians gather around word and sacrament. We join together to receive God's gifts in the liturgy. But do you know the meaning behind what we do? There's a book called Ceremony and Celebration that explains Lutheran liturgical worship. Find out more and read book excerpts online at emmanuelpress.us. E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us. You'll find answers to your liturgical questions in Ceremony and Celebration, emmanuelpress.us. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's our series, Christianity and Pop Culture. Today we're talking about a sports-centered culture, part two of a conversation with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book, Broken: Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Pastor Fisk will be signing this book and speaking at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. He's going to be making the case for the Lord's Prayer. Registration for the conference is $100 and includes meals Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. You can find out more and register for the conference by calling 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, or visit issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Jonathan, we were talking before the break about how men seek truth in the ritual of sport and that that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm wondering about the church that has, in many ways, wholeheartedly abandoned the ritual of the church and then said, well, you know, we got to get these men back in here somehow. They don't feel like they fit anymore with the swaying and the singing and the arm raising and the soft lighting and kind of the romantic atmosphere of Sunday morning. So on Super Bowl Sunday, we're going to bring in the ritual of sport to attract them back in. What's wrong with this?
Well, before we get to what's wrong with it, what's hilarious about it is this is the game that revivalism chose to play. It said, we can compete with the world without using the gifts God gave for that war. We can come up with our own way to beat the world at its own game. And so it comes and says, we're gonna find a way to entice the flesh of mankind into being spiritual. And then, suddenly, it also finds itself not as good at it as it thought it could be. In an era before technology, the stakes weren't quite as high. The playing field was a little more evil, but eased, and not evil, level. But as technology has risen, they've really found themselves in this market-driven consumer world where, you know, singing a couple of folk songs on the couch just doesn't quite cut it anymore for being novel. There's so much novelty that you have to really get into the game. And so while they were advocating that we're going to change style, not substance, they found themselves in a game that really didn't care about their substance at all, but only cared about its presentation. And so they now have to compete with these things that are far beyond what they expected to do, and the only way to do so, rather than, I mean, what are they going to do, repent? that's not what they've been preaching. And so what do? They have to begin adopting the practices of the religions around them. It's like Old Testament Israel on the heights with the pagans, saying, we want a God like you have. And I know that they don't mean this. This is not their intention. But it is effectively what they're doing. So their substance itself is really being changed. And it is, in its own way, it is an admission that their own philosophy of religion has failed. Their belief in their new measures has failed. They can't come up with ways to entice the flesh of man other than by actually becoming worldly. and it's a catastrophe in the making. Personally, I believe we're within a 50-year range here of these churches won't even really be pretending to be Christian anymore. They will just have embraced the Hinduism, the paganism that has gradually kind of taken America by the throat, and doing so very much through things like the ritual of sport and whatnot. So what's wrong with it? Well, what's wrong with it is, you know, when God says, here, I have a sword for you to fight the devil with, you probably should keep the sword. You know, it's not like you should go off and try to find your own toy sword made of twigs or build a battle bow out of something. He gave you a divine weapon. And trying to do church in a way other than God has said, this is my church, this is my assembly, is foolhardy. And sadly, you know, when Protestantism as a whole unshackled itself from the words, this is my body, particularly the word is, it set in motion a catalyst, a way of doing theology that could only eventually remove them from the rest of what he has said. And we're just seeing that play itself out. It's, if you're familiar with Zwingli, this is Zwingli's inheritance rot to its edge. Luther said, you know, a small error at the beginning, like a small angle on a line, it seems not like not much of a long time, but after many, many, many years or many, many days of travel, that small angle will take you to an entirely different part of the world. And that is what we see happening here. It is evil, and that is a lie. I mean, I don't have a problem with American football as a general rule, but the only way I can convince you to come to church on Super Bowl Sunday is by having football there on Super Bowl Sunday, then I'm not sure we have church.
So let's talk, return to something you said before, and that is you kind of don't get to self-identify on the sports field. It's not like, it's not like one of the members of the Lakers can say, you know, today I feel like I belong to the other team. You know,
right.
I just feel like I'm playing for the other team. You don't get to self-identify. You even are given a number with your a jersey with a number and your name on it. Your position is set. The rules are clear. There are guys in striped shirts out there on the field who are making sure that everything proceeds at least as far as you can, not in the NBA. It never happens there. But at least in other sports, as close to the rules of the game as possible. I mean, there's black and white. They're literally black.
Yeah,
and
right
there.
Can you imagine, like, March Madness, three-point shot at the last second. It's so tight it goes to replay. The refs are over at the table. The crowd's all going crazy. They come out, they make a call, and, like, you have the losing coach saying, "Thou shalt not judge. Thou shalt not judge. The Bible says thou shalt not judge." Trying to hold up this ridiculous idea that there is no truth and that real love lets all things just not exist. I mean, we just can't live in that kind of a reality at all. Our minds don't even work that way. And so it puts to the lie what has become this inability to make distinctions in our culture. I watched a video, you can find it on YouTube, pretty clever, of a guy on University of Washington campus asking questions of other students there, and he starts with the question, you know, can I say that I'm a woman? And they all, of course, are telling him yes, but he asks more questions and gets progressively more bizarre. He moves from being a woman to being Chinese, and they're pretty okay with that. But when he starts asking, can I say I'm 6'5", and can I say that I'm a first grader, you can see them as they're struggling because they begin to laugh, many of them, because it's so ludicrous what he's asking them to affirm, but they keep going forward. They won't back off on their thing. Well, if it makes you happy and you don't harm anybody, you know, if that's the distinction you want to make, you can. And so we're at this place, and he demonstrates where, you know, he is a 37-year-old white male, can claim to be a 6'5" Asian American woman in first grade, and everyone has to affirm him in this. What that is the end of knowledge itself. The very idea of philosophy and knowledge, epistemology, that how do we know what we know, is the art of distinguishing between one thing and another. The light switches on, the light switches off. These are two different things, and the reality is different as a result of them. If you lose that, if you lose that ability to distinguish, to judge between one thing and another, just in a, not in a cruelty way, not in a condemning way, but just an ability to say something is what it is, that we can't have the medicine that we have. We can't have the technology that we have. We can't have the laws which protect our freedoms. And most importantly of all, we can't confess a man like Jesus Christ crucified on a day and risen on the third day after that. And so it is very subtly an attack on Christianity as well, as all attacks on truth must be. Sports stands there in the way of all of this. loudly proclaiming, nope, there is reality here, and you enjoy it. You're glad God made it this way, and it's become a retreat for many people. Why? And let's getting back to kind of my question. Well, why is the church not that kind of a retreat? Why is the church not a place where the man says, "Wow, here I know I belong. Here I know what real and false is. What has happened to us?" And I think, you know, that can be a pretty complex answer, and it looks like we're getting here to be out of time. But it is for sure that the ritual of truth in American sport appeals to a lot of people. And it's something that we could maybe learn from. Not that we want to imitate it and put it in church on Sunday morning, but we could ask ourselves, where have we actually denied what we have? Where have we taken away from ourselves the ability to do this? One great example, I think, it'll be an example, I think, till Jesus comes back, is the argument about the crucifix. You know, taking it down because it's basically offensive. And you can say he's risen, he's no longer on the cross, but well, then take the cross down too. The point is, it is a terrible, gory image, and we don't want to look at it because it's true, right? And it reminds us of what we actually deserve. And, by taking it down to make room for more people, what have we done? We haven't gotten more people. We've gotten less. The more we back off on truth, although the claim is always made by liberalism that it will open more doors, it doesn't. It empties the pews. And sports, you know, the day that sports starts saying everybody wins is the day that we stop paying for tickets. I can promise you that.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is Pastor St. John Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota. Check out Worldview Everlasting TV. He is creative director there under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. He's author of the book, Broken Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. Can I promote something real fast?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, okay. So tonight at 7 p.m. Central, if you're at, go to facebook.com/worldvieweverlasting. You can find a link to a live one-hour show we do called Hanging Out. Pastor Brian Wolfmuller is there on with me, and tonight we're interviewing President Matthew Harrison of the LCMS. We're going to be talking about Two Kingdoms theology and answering viewer questions regarding that. So if you like what we're doing here, come check it out there.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk, thanks for being our guest.
Absolutely. Thank you.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We're going to be doing our weekly Sunday school lesson with him. We'll be in John chapter 10, the first 18 verses, very familiar territory. The Good Shepherd with Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel, right after this.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
St. Jacoby Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
The 27th Annual Congress on the Lutheran Confessions, sponsored by the ACL and Luther Academy, is April 6th through the 8th in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission will present two seminars, On Tuesday, April 5th, Pastor Rob Jarvis offers an overview of the Reformation and our confessions. On Wednesday, April 6th, Pastor Jeremiah Johnson presents Catechesis Begins in the Home, Practical Ways to Pass on the Faith to Our Children. Learn more at theclcc.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.